All right, as you look up here this morning and you see that we've got this table is the focal point of what we're talking about, because what we've been looking at, the simplicity of the simple life, over the last multiple weeks, we've been breaking things down. We've been looking at Romans chapter 12. And so one of the things that we're going to be talking about over the next several weeks, and I want you to think about, is just this at the table series. So this table up here is just a focal point for us to think about some things that we're going to be looking at in Scripture. And we've talked about us learning to be apprentice or followers of Jesus. So one of the simple things that I want you to think about this morning is that apprentice use their table. Apprentice use their table. So as we transition from Romans chapter 12, how do we live out these simple things in our everyday lives? How do we keep it simple and yet touch people with the reality of the gospel? We want you to consider the power of the table. It seems really simple, but I want you to think about this. Most of us have a kitchen or dining room table in our homes. If you don't, let us know. We'll buy you a fold-up table so you can get started, okay? If you're just getting rolling in your apartment or whatever, we will hook you up. That's fine. The table holds a special place in history, in the family, and in God's plan for mankind. Now, before we jump in even further, I need for some of you to really listen to me. One of the things that I love about us being able to meet at Rimback Barn is that we rent the space, we don't own it. David and Caitlin are building a business here, and so we have limited capability in this building. You know why I love that? Because some of you, some of us, it forces us to evaluate what has been our normal in the past. Because what's happened in America is we have, because of our wealth and because of our blessings from God, we've constructed these buildings that become what we think is the religious hub in our lives. And so then now that we've got Good Hope Baptist Church property available to us, it's even more important that we realize that all a building is a tool. But it should not be the hub and the center of our spiritual lives. Because what we're going to be looking at this morning, and this is my preemptive challenge to some of you, is that you would press back in to the simplicity of God's design. And what that means is the spiritual nature of our pursuit of God needs to be first personal, but then next it needs to resonate within our family. And then as it resonates within our family, it also needs to empower this church community. And then it needs to be used as the very basis for reaching out and touching our expanded community. So what I love the fact that we are not dependent on a building or a property for ministry. Because wherever you live and reside should be the powerful place of vibrant ministry in your life. So with that said, I want you to think about this. As you explore the Bible, you'll notice that tables play a significant role in shaping the narrative of faith. From the sacred furniture in the temple to the intimate gatherings of Jesus and his disciples, tables become more than just pieces of furniture. They symbolize community, covenant, and divine provision. Frequently, in religious and cultural contexts, you gather around tables that embody fellowship and unity, where shared meals and communal experiences forge bonds and strengthen relationships. These tables symbolize the foundation of community building where individuals come together to share stories, to break bread, and forge lasting connections. Family gatherings in particular are pivotal in fostering a sense of belonging and togetherness. Now, I didn't realize until I did a little bit of study, but Lori and I, when we would watch the series Blue Bloods, some of you have seen some of the Blue Bloods episode. What I got a kick out of is one of Lori and I's favorite scene, and I'll show you up here, is when they gather around the table. I didn't realize that that was one of the most popular portions of the series as it was rolling, because Lori and I just always got just a kick. It was one of our favorite parts of the show. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of dynamics, but just the fact that it was important to this family to gather around the table and share a meal. Now, with that visual in mind, I just want you to think about, I got a little excerpt from ministryanswers.com. If you want to check out, it's just another resource for you to use. It says the importance of hospitality and fellowship and abundance are evident in all aspects of our lives. The table in the Bible is a perfect example of this. The Israelites were commanded to set a table for their God every day. This was a way of showing reverence and honoring him. The table was also a place where they could fellowship with one another and share their blessings. These values are still important today. They could show hospitality to their neighbors as well. We should always be hospitable to our friends and families, but we should share our blessings with others. Now, what we're going to do this morning, I'm going to ask you to follow along with me. We're going to jump into Luke. We're going to be reading Luke chapter 14, and we're just going to give you an example, and I want to just show you, and this is what I want to ask you to consider. If you've never really read the Bible, I don't know where you're currently reading the scriptures, but if you've never looked at the scripture in reference to sharing a meal, the table, or coming together around a meal, what you're going to find is from Genesis all the way to the end of Revelation, there is a constant theme of the power of the table. What is the marriage supper of the Lamb? It's not a picnic. And you get the idea of this huge banquet table. And so I want you to just think about this as we read Luke chapter 14. We're going to read the first 24 verses. Now, we're going to be reading in NLT, and I want to say this. A lot of you, the reason that we're using these verses, that we picked this, a lot of you, as we talk about it, you know that Jesus had meals with primarily what was the group of people that he had meals with? Janked up, messed up people like us. Now, some of you are smiling. You can embrace that. Some of you got a pucker on your face. Just get over yourself. We're all messed up, and that's who Jesus hung out with. And isn't it funny that the people that Jesus hung out with, all the churchy people, were like, oh my goodness, did you see who he was eating with? This is one of the few occasions in the scripture where Jesus is meeting with, I'll call it a church person, a religious leader. So read along with me. Verse 1. One Sabbath day, Jesus went to eat dinner in the home of a leader of the Pharisees, and people were watching him closely. Don't overlook this phrase, watching him closely. You know what microscopic evaluation feels like? Somebody's watching your voice inflection, every word you're saying, your facial expressions, your body posture, how you handle yourself. This is what was going on here. There was a certain man there, whose arms and legs, they were swollen. Jesus asked the Pharisees and experts in religious law, is it permitted in the law to heal people on the Sabbath day or not? When they refused to answer, Jesus touched the sick man and he healed him and he sent him away. I love how he's being preempted here because he already knows kind of what's going on, obviously. Then he turned to them and he said, which of you doesn't work on the Sabbath? If your son, some translations that you read say donkey, so I know big difference between son and donkey. Maybe not, but anyway. Or your cow falls into a pit, don't you rush to get him out? Again, they could not answer. When Jesus noticed that all who had come to the dinner were trying to sit in the seats of the honor near the head of the table, he gave them this advice. When you're invited to a wedding feast, don't sit in the seat of honor. What if someone who is more distinguished than you has also been invited? The host will come and say, hey, give this person your seat. Then you will be embarrassed and you will have to take whatever seat is left at the foot of the table. Instead, take the lowest place at the front, at the foot of the table, Then when your host sees you, he will come and say, hey, friend, we have a better place for you. Then you will be honored in front of all the other guests. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Then he turned to his host. When you put on a luncheon or a banquet, he said, don't invite your friends, brothers, relatives, and rich members, for they will invite you back, and that will be your only reward. Instead, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. Then, at the resurrection of the righteous, God will reward you for inviting those who could not repay you. Hearing this, a man sitting at the table with Jesus explained, what a blessing it will be to attend a banquet or to eat bread in the kingdom of God. Then Jesus replied with this story. A man prepared a great feast and sent out many invitations. When the banquet was ready, he sent his servants to tell the guests, come, the banquet is ready. But they all began making excuses. Think about these excuses. They all began making excuses. One said, I've just bought a field and must inspect it. Please excuse me. Another said, I have just bought 5 pairs of oxen and I want to go try them out. Please excuse me. Another said, I just got married, so I can't come. The servant returned and told his master what they had said. His master was furious and said, go quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and invite the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. After the servant had done this, he reported, there is still room for more. So his master said, go out into the country lanes and behind the hedges and urge anyone you find to come so that the house will be full. For none of those I first invited will get even the smallest taste of my banquet. Now, there's so many different things that we could talk about in here, but I just want you to see that even Jesus, when he was teaching, he was using the table and he was using mealtime, especially in that culture, to teach even deeper, more meaningful things. Now, because of what we talked about earlier, I want to focus on Acts chapter 2 and verse 46 in the New American Standard 95 edition. In verse 46, it says, day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house or in various private homes is a good interpretation of that. It says they were taking their meals or their food together with gladness and sincerity or simplicity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people, and the Lord was adding to their number day by day those who were being saved. Now, I want to point this out. Earlier when I was making some comments, I am in no way trying to denounce us being able to meet together with corporate worship. But I feel like that a lot of times within religious systems that we put so much emphasis on gathering together at a specific building that's been kind of set aside for religious meetings. And what you see here is this example. They came together in the temple, but most of the ministry that was really taking place in their lives was happening in the home. It was happening, people gathering together and sharing life with one another, especially around a table. Now, if you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 23 through 33, it's just another example of what we're talking about, where that Paul is using the meal, he's using food. He's using food offered to idols, and he's talking about the table to teach some important, deep spiritual lessons. Now, what I'd like to do this morning, I just want to share some simple observations from my life about the table and what we have learned, whether it's breakfast, lunch, dinner, whatever. When you share an unrushed meal with someone or a group of people at a table, there are certain experiences that may be revealed. I want you to think about this. When you sit in an unrushed manner and you sit around a table and you gather family and friends together, a natural thing is that it promotes dialogue and interaction. It just naturally promotes dialogue and interaction. We were talking about at the last service that if you are you're drawing closer to Jesus and you want to share your story, you can go up to your neighbor and you can knock on the door, and when they come to the door, you can just look at them and say, "Can I tell you my story? I want to tell you about Jesus." And they may let you in, they may not. They may be shocked and taken back. It's not that it's awkward, but if you say, "Hey man, can you come over? Let's share a meal together." So I have you over and we sit down and we start talking and we're having dialogue. And then all of a sudden it's like, "Hey man, one of the reasons I invited you over is, there's something going on inside of me. Is it okay if I share my story?" You see the difference in just a natural dialogue, natural stuff that takes place around the meal. Another thing is it actually does encourage communication. It encourages communication. When you sit and when we used to have people over, when the kids were younger, we always joked around because, you know, we weren't Greek and we weren't Italian, but our family meal was more like a Greek or an Italian gathering. So it was loud, it was fun, there was a lot of communication going on. People that would come into our home, sometimes they'd be overwhelmed because they weren't sure who to listen to because there were conversation. But it promotes communication. You're thinking about something right now, aren't you? That's what I thought. Okay. And I want you to think about this. This is positive and negative, but it's beautiful. Sitting down at a table, it also, one of the things that it does naturally is that it naturally helps with confrontation. When you come to the table and you're going to share a meal, we're talking about all these things. We're talking about dialogue. We're talking about interaction and communication. Well, if you've got something undealt with and you're sitting down to share a meal, it naturally creates the type of dialogue where it's like, "Yo man, what's up with you? What's going on? I sense, can we talk about it?" And some of us, that's exactly what we need in our lives, and it's not in a bad thing, but it's a beautiful place to say, "Man, you hurt me. I was frustrated. What you said to me 2 hours ago, it really affected me deeply." And what's amazing is over a dinner table, it's easy to say, "I didn't mean it that way. Please forgive me." Another thing that's revealed, and some of you, when you hear me say this, I was dying laughing because I had no idea how many people after the last service would say, "Never inviting you over for dinner." Okay? But think about this. If you pay attention, you can learn a lot about someone by spending time with them around the dinner table. Some people were terrified after I said this with the last service. You know, if you just pay attention, you can tell whether somebody's super selfish about food. I always get a kick out of it. I do this randomly. I just think it's fun. My wife is always like, "You gotta stop doing that." But I walk by somebody, especially like middle to older age women that have fries in their hands and they just walk out somewhere. I'll walk over and be like, "Oh my goodness, can I have one of those?" And instantaneously, like my wife is like, "Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. He does that all the time. I don't know how to stop him." But what you find out is I'll have people that will be like, "Sure, you want one?" And then I'll take one and say, "Thank you." And that's when she really gets embarrassed. Or I'll have somebody that'll be like, "Why are you asking me that? Get away from my fries, dude. I don't know you." But it's the same way when you sit down at the table and you pay attention and listen and you embrace the dynamics that are going on, you're going to find out a lot about the people that you're sitting down to meal with. I also want to point out that some other aspects of revealing experiences. When you sit down at the table for a meal, some of you, the reason you don't like to sit down at the table, because you can't hide. It's hard to hide when you sit down at the table for a meal with somebody. Another experience is it's difficult to isolate or live in isolation. Some of you right now, the stuff that you've got going on inside and what you've done to yourself, just for you to simply find a place or to share a meal to sit down at the table with someone will probably help you psychologically. It'll help you emotionally. Because more and more in our culture, we isolate ourselves. And it's hard to sit down at the table and live in isolation. Another thing, when you sit down at a table, whether it's three people, whether it's eight people, it's hard not to participate. Because if there's six people and five of them are talking and the one person's not, if the five people are paying attention, you realize who's not participating. And then you can turn to that person, you can try to draw them in. It's beautiful, it's positive. Another thing, it's tough to be in that kind of situation and not communicate. Now, some of you, I know that a lot of things have changed. So I learned from the last service, this is a way bigger sensitive issue than what we originally thought. Eating together as a family has drastically changed in the past 15 to 20 years. Some of you, I want to ask you to guard your heart and mind, because I'm not trying to condemn anybody. I'm not trying to throw stones at anybody. But we have to look at areas where we may need to make some improvement so that we can experience the beautiful things that God has put in place for us to experience. Some of you are in the building trades, different aspects. Fewer homes today are built with an actual dining room. Many homes are designed around a huge screen with an expectation that the family will just eat in front of the screen or at separate times based on the ease of schedule. I know that things have changed. I know that a lot of you, both the husband and the wife, are working to be able to make mortgage and the bills. So please understand, I'm not throwing stones, but we have to look at the impact of some of the things that have been taking place the last 15 or 20 years, and it just seems natural. The phone or the tablet has also made a drastic impact on eating together at the table. A lot of times when Lori and I go into a restaurant, if you go into a restaurant and you notice and you look around at couples and families, it's amazing how many people in the restaurant are on their phones or their tablets, and couples or families are not even engaging one another in conversation. And so then, if you are ever dining somewhere with the Duggins family, you will notice us, and we will stand out because we are laughing and we are making eye contact and we are engaging in conversation. And sometimes, like if Jacqueline's around or anybody in our family, you might just periodically hear this like, ah! Which usually people are like, emergency? No, okay, good. They're just laughing. It's good. And the reason I say that is because we often talk how sad it is because we're just enjoying being with one another. And so many people today don't talk. And I'm just going to say this. It might be a good idea as a baby step for some of you to make your meal time, whatever that looks like, a no technology time. Maybe get a basket, get a plate, get something, and take the tablet, take the phones, and create. It's just a baby step, but you understand how technology so grips us, and it can be a blessing, but it also has a profound effect on us. Now, here's the thing. What I'm talking about this morning is such a sociological issue in our current culture that if you look at psychology today, I've got a portion that I want to read to you from neurolaunch.com. It's another psychology resource that this is being addressed in our Western world because of the negative impact that it's having on our families. This is the end of the article. If you want to look at the article up, it's Psychology of Eating Together, the Social and Emotional Benefits of Shared Meals. I want to read the concluding remarks here. Listen to what they say at the end of this article. As we wrap up our exploration of the psychology of eating together, it's clear that sharing a meal is about so much more than just food. It's a powerful tool for building relationships, boosting mental health, embracing cognitive function, and shaping our eating habits. In a world where eating alone psychology, the mental impact of solo dining, that's another article, is becoming increasingly common, it's more important than ever to prioritize communal meals. Whether it's a family dinner, a potluck with friends, or lunch with coworkers, make an effort to eat with others regularly. And remember, it's not about creating picture-perfect, Instagram-worthy meal. It's about the connection. It's about the conversation. It's about the laughter. It's about creating a space where everyone feels welcome and valued. So gather your loved ones, fire up the stove, or order takeout, no judgment here, and savor not just the food, but savor the company. After all, some of life's most precious moments happen not in a boardroom or a classroom, but around a dinner table. We use the illustration with this church family. We are trying to be a place where everyone has a seat at the table. Come as you are. Join us. Be a part of us. Come as you are. We just want to encourage you, don't stay the way you are if you're struggling. But we want everybody to have a seat at the table. And so this table analogy is way deeper and way more important. But what we really need to look at is we need to get back to the simplicity of creating opportunities for us to be together. And the most amazing place for spiritual vitality to be experienced and expressed is at a table where people are gathered around. My son-in-law, he was up at the war college in Rhode Island. He's in the Navy. He's an officer in the Navy. And he couldn't even share this story with me without crying because it so touched his heart. So he was only there for 6 weeks. And so the last Sunday that he was at this church in Rhode Island that really blessed him and embraced him, there was this couple that came up to him and said, "Hey, who are you eating with today? Where are you eating?" He said, "I don't know." He said, so he was talking to the gentleman and he said, "Hey man, can you come over? We want to just invite you over to our house." And so he said, "Hey, go find my wife and just go talk to her, tell her you're coming." And so TJ said, "I felt really awkward. Like I'm going, I don't even know." So he goes and finds her and he says, "Your husband told me to come tell you that I'm coming to dinner." And she goes, "Okay, great. Do you like Filipino breakfast?" He goes, "I don't know. Never had Filipino breakfast." And so this is what he said. That so touched his heart and his soul because he said, "They knew that I was leaving that next week and I would never be back in that church family again." He said, but it was such an affirmation of their care and concern and vitality spiritually for me. This is what he said. "I will forever be touched by their hospitality and their generosity." He went over there. He said, "Number one, I love Filipino breakfast now." And he said, "We had an absolute blast, but it touched his heart." Why? Because they were going to sit down at a table and share a meal, and they made room for him. Let's be a family that continues to learn, grow, and change regarding the gospel message. Let's learn the power of being at the table together. Let's do whatever we need to do to elevate the use of the table to a place of impact in our lives. It's a place of fellowship. It's a place of connection. Some of you, you're longing desperately for connection. It's a place of community. You're longing for community. Let's not make it any harder than it needs to be. Conversation. Some of you, I know that you just desperately want to be heard. It's so simple for us to create conversation space. We just talked about Romans chapter 12. We went through it. This is a place to express and extend hospitality, making room. The table is a place for family. So what needs to be modified in our lives today? I'm not talking about huge, drastic, crazy steps. I'm talking about what kind of baby step can you take today to move back toward the simple things of just being able to share the table together. Let's trust God in his plan. Let's ask him to help us to understand how to live in healthy relationship with a vibrancy on the most simplistic way that comes from and is blessed by the Holy Spirit. We're going to be talking more about the table. One of the most famous table settings is in lieu of where we're heading for Easter. That last meal that was shared with Jesus and all that took place there. It's important for us to press back into the most simplistic things. Do you view your table and where you live as a tool or a space to share the unconditional love and mercy and grace of God with other people? If not, I'm going to ask you to change and modify how you view what God has given you. Let's think about these things as we worship together.